From the farm to your fridge, from the factory floor to your front door. When it works, it's like clockwork. Every little integrated piece does its job and the system just, well, it's marvellous, really. Supply chains crisscross the world. But, dear listener, as I told you at the very beginning of the program, all is not well when it comes to the crucial part of the supply chain, the humble shipping container. Now, I've admitted that I've got a dozen of them on my farm, but I refuse to take personal responsibility for this crisis. Did you know that these big metal boxes are in short supply? And to tell us why they've become scarce and what it means for the global economy, we welcome to our little program Anna Nagurny. Anna is a leading authority on supply chains and distribution, and is professor in the School of Management at the University of Massachusetts. Anna, welcome to the Antipodes.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
Why are shipping containers in such high demand? One would have thought that they were, you know, everything had sort of gone slack.
On the contrary, at the beginning, things did go slack. Many of us were hunkered down around the world and consumers weren't purchasing goods. And that meant that a lot of manufacturers stopped manufacturing certain goods. At the same time as the pandemic evolved, consumers started to want to buy all sorts of goods, whether it's exercise equipment or office equipment, laptops, new furniture, supplies for their homes. And that created a huge demand in terms of all sorts of different products as well as raw materials. Now, the thing is, these wonderful shipping containers really revolutionized global trade and global supply chains. Without this brilliant invention by Malcolm McLean, who was an American, I must say, we wouldn't have global supply chains. We wouldn't have global trade at the level that we have now on the globe. But the thing is, at the beginning of the pandemic, okay, I think the World Health Organization declared the pandemic on March 11, 2020. We had many of these containers located in different parts of the globe. When China stopped manufacturing, right, to battle the coronavirus, the containers were in different locations. And when they started opening up, they needed the containers, but they were in the wrong spots. And it takes weeks to get the containers to points where you can actually load them up with the various products and the raw materials as well.
So as a consequence, almost all the remaining containers in Asia headed out to Europe and North America and didn't get back quickly enough.
Precisely. And so we've been dealing with that and all sorts of other disruptions. You've probably seen, you know, the Ever Given blocking the Suez Canal for about a week, resulting in hundreds of ships having to take longer routes. It was stuck in the muck. And only recently did it finally make its journey after many months to its destination in the Netherlands. So we've had all sorts of major disruptions. And not only is it a matter of shipping containers not being where they are, there's also because of the demand for all sorts of products now by consumers around the globe, there are major issues with port congestion around the globe. That's happening in eastern U.S. It's happening on the West Coast in California. Right now, there are almost 600 huge cargo ships that are stuck in various parts around the world because they can't dock. So we're also dealing, ironically, with this port congestion, and there are many issues associated with that. One of these is that we have labor shortages. There just aren't enough people to unload the workers. You know, some of these are obviously automated in different parts of the world. But still, you need the critical resource of labor to unload these containers. And you also need the truckers.
It's a fraction, of course, of the old days with wharfies, as we call them in Australia, or stevedores in the US, when every piece of, had to be carried on the backs of people.
Right, exactly. And now we need the truck drivers too. There are shortages of truck drivers around the world. You think of what even is happening in Britain now, which is pretty severe. They're running out of petrol. They don't need enough truck drivers. They're thinking of relaxing visas and so forth because they need drivers for the product. So as you were saying so nicely at the beginning, you know, these are global supply chains. You can think of these as being networks with all these different links. And associated with these links, you know, you have manufacturing, you have distribution, obviously you have storage, but you also have transportation. And now we have about 90% of the world goods being transported via ships.
And you know, it's very interesting, Anna, that they have an afterlife. I was describing the dozen that I have on my farm, which is a long way from the ocean in New South Wales. And the demand for them, for this afterlife, is also growing, isn't it? Because people do such clever things with them.
Exactly. That's absolutely fascinating. There are parts of Asia where they're used essentially for markets, for storage. Some could even be refrigerated. Some are being used for homes, for houses, and not just for storage. Some are even being used for showers and bathroom facilities around the globe, which I find to be remarkable because they're very, very durable.
And where are they mainly made?
Okay, that's a fascinating question. Most of them, the majority, are actually made in China. And interestingly enough, now this year, China said that it'll be producing over 5 million of these containers. In 2019, pre-pandemic, they only produced about 2.8 million of these steel containers. So they see the demand too and the shortages. Okay, but a lot of times they're in the wrong place. For example, we have many of them also stuck in Chicago. Okay, because we can't get enough workers to put them on trains, to get them to the ports, to get them to on the ships, okay, to China and different parts in Asia, so they can be loaded up.
And with the scarcity comes cost. Give us an idea of how much the price of shipping containers have increased.
Okay, it was, for example, in 2019, a 40 foot, they're called like EUs, equivalent unit container, would cost typically about $2,000, you know, to ship it from Asia to the US. And now, if it's time sensitive, it can cost as much as $25,000. So it's increased tenfold in 2 years. So that's adding cost to consumers as well as producers. If you can get a container, okay, and it's going to cost you a lot of money. So you can see, you know, all sorts of inflationary pressures that we have right now. And many of these have to do precisely with transportation.
An Australian food importer complains that a container that cost $600 pre-COVID was now worth thousands and could reach $4,000 and beyond. That echoes the experience of importers pretty much everywhere.
Yes, definitely. That's a problem worldwide. So I was saying they've gone up almost 10 times in price. And on top of that, there are many shippers because everyone's excited about the holiday season, Christmas and so forth. A lot of Christmas decorations are actually produced in Asia. But some of the exporters are in Europe, for example. And many of their customers, the retailers, were expecting to get the supplies, say, in June. And many of the goods haven't arrived yet. So we have months of delays in terms of getting goods. So I think it's really important, you know, family members, if you want to do your Christmas shopping, you should be either planning locally or maybe making your own Christmas decorations and Christmas gifts.
I have to thank you for making me aware of the scale of this in the supply chains. In total, dear listener, US $14 trillion worth of the world's goods spend some time inside a big metal box. So that's an estimated 90% of the world's goods are transported by sea, Anna.
Yes, precisely. Isn't that remarkable? And if you think of one of these huge ships, which can carry, say, about 20,000 containers, some of the biggest ones can actually carry 24,000 containers, which is 200,000 tons of weight, okay, one ship. If we were to offload all the containers and put them on a single train, That would be, for example, 44 miles long. Just one ship, okay, which is mind-boggling. And what I find so fascinating, if you're trying to envision, okay, how many items can one of these huge ships hold? Okay, it can hold, say, 156 million pairs of shoes, which is an awful lot of shoes. You know, 300 million tablet computers, and this is one of my favorite statistics, 900 million cans of baked beans, okay, for those who are really hungry. That's a lot of baked beans, and that's only one ship.
And, okay, of course, and the ships are getting bigger and bigger. The contribution that air makes is absolutely minuscule.
Excuse me?
I'm thinking about, you know, loading stuff into aeroplanes. It is minuscule in scale compared to the containers.
Actually, that's fascinating that you bring up that point, okay? So many retailers now are extremely concerned because of the problems in shipping and the port congestion and the delays, that some are actually chartering their own planes. Okay, so, and this will add to costs as well.
Yeah, okay.
Because they can't get, and some are actually chartering their own cargo ships to be able to deliver goods, for example, to the U.S.
You mentioned earlier the story of the Ever Given in the Suez, and that reminds us that, 12% of the world's global traffic, shipping traffic, passes through this canal.
Yeah, isn't that remarkable? So we've done a lot of research in terms of modeling supply chains and stress testing supply chains and identifying, okay, which are the most important transportation links? Which are the most important suppliers? And you can do that kind of analysis and it'll just pop right at you. Okay, this is a critical link. We need to protect it. We need to invest in it. We have to make sure that the weather forecast, you know, is done right in terms of Suez Canal so the winds don't, you know, move these ships, you know, to the side and blockade hundreds of different cargo ships for days on end. And it took, you know, weeks to get that readjusted. And also billions of dollars it was cost.
Now, since the glory days of the Titanic, until it had an encounter with an iceberg. Since then, of course, ships have got bigger and bigger and bigger, and cruise ships, you know, are simply immense. But you're also predicting that container ships will continue to get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yes, precisely. And that creates challenges, obviously. But there are many ports around the world that are investing in deeper path, obviously ports, you know, wider ports and so forth, that's happening along the east coast of the U.S. And also the Panama Canal has been expanded a few years ago. That was an immense project. So rather than having, for example, goods travel via train from the west coast of the U.S. to the east coast, many are now, the goods are transiting from Asia through the Panama Canal. But if something happens to the Panama Canal, obviously that creates, you know, gridlock and all sorts of propagating failures, you know, through the supply chain as well.
And I'm of an age that remembers the dawn of the container shipping phenomenon. And as you say, it was that quite remarkable Texan, as I recall, who came up with the notion. Who would have thought that the idea would take over as totally and indeed as quickly as it did?
Yes, I think it's absolutely marvelous. And there's so many advantages to these steel shipping containers. For one, they preserve the goods. Okay, they're much more safer in them, they're preserved better, and also they're much more secure. Okay, because it's very hard to break into them. They're locked, you know, they're taped and so on. So I think that's also something that a lot of people don't discuss much. But safety and security of our supplies, you know, so they're not tampered with, is also a very important characteristic.
You cast a wide net historically. You take us back to the Phoenicians, 1600 BC, when Egypt ferried wood and fabrics and glass to Arabia in sacks via camel-driven caravans. And we're still finding amphora, some even with wine in them, you know, lost overboard in the Mediterranean.
Right, exactly. And that is also fascinating because trade is very special. That enriches our lives, it enriches our economies, it enriches our communities. But the goods need some sort of containers to be moved in, okay, to make sure that they arrive in a proper fashion at the destination, so we don't lose them en route. And sometimes it does happen that containers aren't secured properly, okay, on container ships. And some of them we have, you know, big containers of bananas ending up in the Atlantic Ocean, and that's not good.
So all hail Malcolm McLean, whose big idea this was in the 1950s.
Indeed. And actually, the idea even before that was used by the military and also in the Vietnam War. And it's wonderful that we have the standardization now. So you have these containers really fitting like Lego blocks. They're beautiful to watch. Okay. They're also very colorful. And some can be stacked as high as 12 on top of each other, which is quite remarkable.
Well, one of the figures you quote, which is astonishing, is that in 1956, manually loading a ship, as the wharfies used to do, cost $5.86 per ton, and the standardized container cuts that to just 16 cents.
Yes, so you see the cost effectiveness there. Okay, that's huge. That's dramatic. And that also helped us to have these global supply chains and to enhance global trade because the cost was going down. But now we have to worry because, you know, the tacking on costs because of port congestion, the shortages of labor, not having enough containers. People are struggling to get containers, a lot of retailers and so on, especially for the holiday season.
Before I let you go, you've made the point that the impact of COVID on all of this. What about climate change? I know you're thinking about that as well.
Oh, that's a very interesting point. And obviously, maritime shipping adds a lot to the world's pollution. That's not discussed very often. There are actually some manufacturers that will use a slope boat from China in order to minimize the emissions, which I find really, really interesting. Clearly, with more storms, that's going to add to the disruption, that's going to add to the delays, that's going to add to, you know, you're going to have to reroute your ships as well.
And so Anna, we've got to reroute our interview because we're out of time. Thank you very much for that, Professor.
Oh, it's such a pleasure.
Professor Anna Nagurny, a leading authority on supply chains. Anna is Chair in Integrative Studies at the Eisenberg School of Management at the University of Massachusetts.